As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I can still remember John Inverdale's head coming back down through the hatchway to look as if, what the hell's up with you? And the policeman leading me away by the elbow. Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, and I'm joined today by Charlie Eccleshare and James Moore. And Charlie, before we get into everything going on at Spurs, and there's plenty going on, let's talk about another podcast you've been working on this week. I hear you've been to Wimbledon.
Yes, I'm at Wimbledon this week. I'm juggling Wimbledon and Spurs, and then next week it's Wimbledon until Korea.
Oh, and then are you going to Korea?
I am, yeah.
How lovely.
Yeah, so that should be fun.
Let me just tell you, for the sake of your because we're colleagues now, I want you to be very careful at Wimbledon. You've been to football
tough
all over
place
the world.
I mean, I find the
most frightening thing that's ever happened to me on a sports stadium happened at Wimbledon. Many years ago, I had a show with John Inverdale, and you know, he's mad about the tennis. I'm less mad about the tennis, but that's a separate story. And he invites me, he says, come on, we'll do the show together. We'll do it from Wimbledon. So we're on the centre court of Wimbledon. Fantastic. The BBC's commentary box at this time was suspended from the ceiling, and you had to walk underneath it and go up a ladder through a small hatch to get into the commentary box. This is for later on. So I'm doing it. We're doing the commentary, and I'm doing a kind of social colour piece about it. And I'm saying, I hate all this. I hate all these posh people paying £4 each for a strawberry, and there's too many servants collecting the ball for the players. The usual shtick that I have about tennis. And I kept this up for about 2 hours, because we're on for hours and hours and hours. And eventually, against all protocols, one of the other commentators came in from like an outside court, court 16 or whatever, and said, I'm sorry, I just cannot put up with this. This is ridiculous. It's absolutely scandalous. Now, at that almost the same moment, it became clear that some of the patrons of Wimbledon had enough of me as well. And a policeman's helmet appeared through the hatchway in the floor. And he said, are you Danny Kelly? I said, yeah. He said, I think you should probably come with me. I said, what? A small crowd had gathered around the BBC commentary box to have it out with me about Wimbledon. And I was removed from the stadium with a police escort for my own safety.
And the away end on centre court.
On my youngest sister's life, every word of that is true. And I can still remember John Inverdale's head coming back down through the hatchway to look as if, what the hell's up with you? And the policeman leading me away by the elbow.
When was this, Danny? Can you remember?
It must be 20 years ago, I'm afraid. I can't remember the exact year.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And
if they find out that I do a podcast with you, maybe I'll be banned as well. So we need to keep this quiet.
You'll certainly get some a more thorough searching than anybody
in
else
fact,
going
I
in there.
I think there was a sign I saw. There was a sign I sent to court. Have you seen this man? Yeah. I thought I recognised him.
Yeah. Do we know if Molly King from the Saturdays listens to this?
I'm not sure.
Now that name has come up, Charlie, actually, I should mention this completely tangentially.
Go on.
I know Charlie thinks he's gone very big time by doing a tennis podcast with one of the Saturdays, but I have done a podcast with a more successful pop star.
Oh,
who may well be listening to this.
This is a good game.
Well, it's not for Charlie because I told him yesterday.
Okay. Recent pop star, old pop star?
I reckon by your definition, with respect, yes, recent.
Yes. Okay, so Elvis Presley. I mean,
it's probably around the time, probably around the time you were getting kicked out of Wimbledon.
Football fan?
20 years ago. A Spurs fan?
Okay. There's so many, though, aren't there? Go on, tell us.
There are so many.
Tell us.
Anthony Costa of Blue, who have had three number ones in their hit parade, and I believe the Saturdays have only had one. There you go. Oh, baby.
And Anthony is also a lovely, lovely bloke, by the way, isn't he?
Genuinely,
absolutely
lovely
top
bloke.
Man. Yeah, yeah.
And I think like an hour after I told Charlie about that, he liked one of Charlie's tweets. Just completely unrelated. So,
just
Anthony, if you are listening, mate, I hope you're well.
So,
we love Anthony.
So, when you're doing one of your in-depth interviews, I don't know Charlie over there at Wimbledon with Goran Ivanisevic or
another contemporary reference.
Yeah, possibly. I'm working on. Let the joke breathe.
Sorry.
Or possibly Buster Mottram. by all means, don't mention my name in case I am still on the wanted list in Southwest, whatever it is. Let's talk about the transfer scene. It's gone very, very quiet, hasn't it? After an apparently blistering start, now we see other top six, seven, eight clubs lashing out the dough. What's going on, James, Charlie, whoever knows, with Everton? Because it strikes me that Spurs seem to want about half their players. Richarlison, Gordon. They have been offered or want Harry Winks, Stephen Bergwijn. It reminds me of that time. Remind me which three players. Didn't Harry Redknapp buy three Portsmouth players the same day?
Well, there was the time the Sunderland as well signed in the same window. Yeah. Tainio, Chimbonda, Malbronk, I think, in 2008.
Yeah, and it was at the three that Redknapp... Yeah, when
no
Redknapp was
Pamaro,
at Portsmouth.
Sean Davis.
Yes.
And was it either Defoe or Mendes?
Pedro Mendes.
I mean, and then, of course, prior to this, we had George Graham when he bought the entire Wimbledon back four. Yeah. But I'd rather consign that to the dustbin of history. What's happening at Everton, Charlie?
Well, they are in... I mean, I did a piece with my Everton colleagues yesterday, kind of spelling out the situation, and there are a lot of players are being mentioned. But the most serious one, Richarlison, I feel fairly confident about that now. Progress is being made. I don't want to jinx it because, you know, how many times we've been here before with Spurs and other clubs where you think a deal's happening and then there's some last minute hitch. But they are, all we can say for definite is that progress is being made. Talks are at an advanced stage and there's a will for that to get done. Anthony Gordon, no, not at this point anyway. Everton really, really don't want to sell him. They don't want to do any sort of double deal. He's kind of, you know, the bright young thing who they're pinning their hopes
family
on.
Family silver.
Yeah, I was going to say that. The what was it that Leeds talked about? Not going to sell the crown jewels.
The crown jewels, yeah.
And then he very much did. So I think that phrase has been tarnished a bit.
Can I ask you, I'll come back to what you're saying, but is this notional deadline of the 30th of June for Everton to have some money brought into the club? Because obviously they have got economic problems. One half of their ownership has been sanctioned. They've got to build a stadium. And we all know how that feels, by the way. I see in certain newspapers, not necessarily The Athletic, that Everton have got a kind of deadline, but they've got to get some money in. Is that right?
Well, this has become like a really big preoccupation. It's one of those things where you hear about it once and then you hear about it everywhere. And it seems to be like the big talking point in football recruitment circles. I mean, basically, they've made big, big losses. I think it's more than 100 million in each of the previous 3 years. And their worry is that they will kind of break Premier League rules on how big your losses can be. Now, obviously, the Premier League have made some allowances, I understand, in previous years because of COVID and that sort of thing. So it's slightly a question of how serious this is. If they are genuinely worried that there'll be a kind of pretty stern punishment, then they might be hustled. The thought was they might be hustled into making a sale before July 1st, financial year running from July 1st to June 30th. So, but as we get closer, you get the sense that maybe they will be able to get by without making this big sale. And somehow, you know, as long as they make it, they'll feel fairly confident that they'll be okay. I mean, I think what they really didn't want to happen was for them to be bullied by other clubs who know that they're in this position and that they need to make a sale. I mean, because their hope would be to an extent, obviously they don't want it to go on too long, but they'd want to drag it out, try and draw a Chelsea or someone else into it. Obviously now it looks like Chelsea will get Rafinha anyway, but I think that was, you know, something that they thought might happen. Either way, I think Spurs, if they can come up with a bid of around 60 million, that seems to be the figure at which Everton would sell. Everton accept that, you know, July 1st, June 30th, whenever it happens, they do need to make a big sale this year. And the thought before the summer was that it would be Richarlison or Calvert-Lewin. But I think Calvert-Lewin, given he was injured for so much of last season, I don't think teams really want to take a big punt, you know, that kind of money. Whereas Richarlison finished the season really well. So he's the one they can get good money for. And I think it'd be a great signing for Spurs.
But that Richarlison signing, when that was first kind of mooted a couple of weeks ago, I thought that seemed like a mad one, that wouldn't happen, that just didn't make any sense. But actually, when you look at it, when you break it down, a guy who can play on the left and as a centre forward, and those obviously are not two areas of massive weakness in the squad, but in the team, but if you want to add depth to the squad, adding someone who can play in two positions is an obvious thing you should do. And we've talked so many times, not just on this podcast, but in general discourse about Spurs since Harry Kane got into the team, about how they need a backup striker. The obvious solution was someone who could either play with Kane or instead of him. And Richarlison obviously gives them that option. So, and you know, his Premier League goal record isn't 1 in 2. I think it's about 1 in 3. But for someone who's played out wide in a team that struggled largely, that's not terrible. I mean, if he got a dozen 13 goals for Spurs next season, I think you'd think that was a pretty good return, really.
Yeah, I mean,
if you add that to Kane and Son and Kulusevski and whoever else.
I mean, 60 million looks strong to me, but I really like him as a footballer. But my problem with him is that he's a nuisance, isn't he? Is he going to be throwing himself to the ground?
Well, yeah, I think he's a nuisance on the pitch.
Yeah.
I don't think he is off it. And the on-pitch stuff bothers people to varying degrees. I think when that's your own player, you probably find it a whole lot less annoying. But yeah, I mean, we've spoken on the pod before about next season, the Champions League element, the five subs, the fact that Conte doesn't want a kind of just set 11 and move away from that mindset. But I think also, I think what James says is completely true. Having someone, you know, that's the most elegant solution to this age-old Kane problem, is have someone who can play up front as well as other positions. But also, I was speaking to someone yesterday and he was saying, but, you know, will Richarlison get in the team given, you know, Kane, Son, Kulusevski? And I think that's the big question. But the way I would look at it is take one cluster of games that Spurs have coming up when they play, say, West Ham away on the Tuesday, they play Fulham on the Saturday, midweek they play Champions League, they play City away then, on that weekend, then another Champions League midweek, and then Leicester at home. Now, in those, what's that, 6 games, I'd imagine Richarlison would start 2 or 3.
Yeah.
He'd probably come on in the 60th minute in 2 or 3. And that, to me, is about the best Richarlison's going to get at a Champions League club. That's a lot of minutes. So I think if he wants to play for a Champions League club, that's sort of okay. And that's also good for Spurs, you know, to be getting that amount of mileage out of a player.
I do think, though,
it's not like he'll come and sit on the bench for all those games.
But
the
transformation to 5, possibly 6 and 7, as I always say with concussions, to half the team, half the outfield team being allowed to be changed, is one of the most profound changes in football. It really is a huge difference. And we, as people who love the game and talk about it, and the players are going to have to change their mindset. The starting 11, it's important when you get to the final of the Champions League because you want to say, I'm in the starting 11. But I think this is a much different game now. We're heading towards... We've seen the way rugby union has gone.
Well, I was just going to say, and I know James will turn off at this point, but rugby...
It's transformation.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. He's taking his headphones.
James is gone now, yeah. Cheers. And thank you, man.
And Danny, you know, the growth, the advent of this term finishes, the Eddie Jones, England, that sort of... you know, became synonymous with, because you'd empty your bench. But, and I would say rugby has
what
shown...
What a phrase, by the way. Go on.
But rugby has shown what I think is the really damaging side of this, is that it just benefits the bigger teams and makes upsets even harder to come by.
Oh, that's exactly what's going to happen as well.
You know,
yeah.
That's what's happened in rugby and will happen in football inevitably. But if you are one of the best teams like Spurs, it is probably going to benefit you, but you need to make signings like Richarlison, like what City do, like what Chelsea do, and Liverpool, you know, just have lots of options off the bench.
I just think the players will be the last ones to get it, you know, because they're competitive human beings. But they will eventually, presumably their agents will calm them down and say, mate, we're getting 220 grand a week. Don't worry if you're not, you know, playing in the starting lineup.
I think that's true. But at the point the game will eventually evolve to a system where, like, no outfield player starts 38 Premier League games, presumably, at some point.
Mm.
Well, that would just be like, or certainly at like one of those elite clubs that's playing in European matches every other week. You're just not going to get, like, you know, a right back who plays in every single league game. You're going to have like another option who's going to fill in for 5 or 6.
Yeah, and the coaches will like this as well, because it makes the system you play even more important than the players you play. And of course, they've always looked to make their
the
own
good coaches. Job. Yeah.
Yeah, the good ones. Yeah.
But also, Danny, not just will the blow for those players who aren't playing be softened by the fact that, oh, you're still getting paid a lot. It might be that what happens is some of those subs reap the benefits of a player coming on and doing the hard graft for an hour, doing the attritional stuff. You come on when you're fresher and you come on with three other or four other world-class players who are fresher and fill your boots against the tiring Burnley defence. So it may be that it doesn't become quite so frustrating to be put on the bench. If say, you are Richarlison, say, who starts... Maybe he'll start the first couple of games on the bench.
Also, is there not a possibility he'll extend the career of players as well? Not only in terms of like playing less football in your sort of peak years, but also,
yeah,
you know, with what you're just saying now about being a quote-unquote finisher in mind, if Harry Kane at 39 or whatever can come off of the last 20 minutes, half an hour of a game every other week.
Oh, yeah. Think of someone like Lewandowski, who is phenomenally fit in his mid-30s.
He's a finisher.
Yeah, but exactly. Imagine Lewandowski coming off for the last 20 minutes in a big game. You'd just be going, oh, God. So these things are all possible. And I really like Richarlison as a footballer. I don't like his antics, but, you know, everybody has their own standpoint on that. And hopefully get it done. Very quickly, anybody got any news about the great clear out? Cameron Carter-Vickers has gone. meanwhile, there's a pile of unwanted and unused footballers, and nobody seems to be coming and taking them away, like the council or something.
Everything must go. Yeah. Well, yeah, just to finish off this Everton Spurs, it's almost like they're at a party and they're just only talking to one another. And it's like, God, maybe go and socialise with some other
people. Well, the news that the owners had dinner together.
I love the twist of this window that John Sopel became a Spurs transfer ITK. That was not one I saw coming.
Is he a Spurs fan, by the way? Because he said comes to Spurs, but I could have meant like geographically comes to London.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm 99% sure he's a Spurs fan. I think he's tweeted about Spurs before.
Get him on here.
Yeah, and another. I, as I said to you yesterday, James, I have met him. And he's a lovely man.
And one of the Sky reporters saying, we know that he definitely didn't discuss transfers. So what the hell were those two talking about? Can you get me tickets for Les Mis? I mean, what the hell was going on there? Bill, I haven't seen Rent or whatever he wants to see from 25 years ago.
Blood Brothers, of course. Well, that was the big Bill Cameron one, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did. And it was great, by the way, as well. On the legitimate London theatre, it was really good.
But
yeah,
it was, yeah, back in the day. But yes, yeah, so, I mean, Winks is the one who there have been conversations about, and his name has been raised in discussions with other deals, you know, like Richarlison, but it maybe that ends up being a separate if it gets done. Bergwijn, Everton are interested in. I'm not sure everyone wants that to be a swap deal.
Does he want to go to Ajax?
Well, yeah, and you know, go, you know, get Champions League football. But the sense I have is that that's dragged on for a long time. I think he and Ajax were pretty confident that was going to happen. Hasn't happened yet. I reported this last week that Spurs wanted to bring someone in before letting Bergwijn go.
Plus, Ajax have now got the Sebastian Haller money. They're not short of the job.
I mean, Ajax seem to have all their players being linked with moves away. I do slightly feel for their supporters. But yeah, I think if that drags on, then the Premier League is attractive. And it's not just Everton. There are other clubs interested in him in England as well. So yeah, lots of conversations about various different players and various different musicals, as you say.
The only reason I asked about the outgoings is that, you know, Antonio Conte, among his myriad demands, it seemed to me, James, that he was saying he wanted all this stuff done before the pre-season training. Well, they're starting to drift back now, aren't they? That deadline is fast approaching.
Yeah, there can't be too long left. So skip Doherty and
Tanganga already came there back on Monday.
Yeah, they're already back.
And then the rest come back on Monday, this Monday coming. Well, apart from the internationals, they come back sort of Friday before.
I suppose
the
early bit. It's probably it's more before Korea, isn't it? I guess than actually being back at the training ground, I suppose. But yeah, I can see. I can see pressure being exerted, let's put it that way.
Okay, listen, James Horncastle has written in The Athletic about Tottenham's move for a new set-piece coach. I must admit, I had never heard of Gianni Vio. And I guess, James, the question here is, why not? Because, let's be fair, but he does both ends of the pitch, I understand. But defensively last year against, when we were struggling, set-piece was one of the issues that we were having, wasn't it? Corners particularly. What do we know about Mr. Vio?
I say he's worked with Mancini, with Italy. And what was the number? There was a number of set-piece routines he had.
It's over 2,000, he claims.
Yeah, it's an insane number. Thousands and thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had that many combinations, that's got to be pretty good, right?
One of
them's got to work over the course of a season. I do have to say, they did score a couple of goals from set-pieces at the end of the season, didn't they?
Yeah.
There were a couple of, like, Son corners.
Yeah, Son corners. But I tweeted this earlier. They were pretty low down for goals scored from corners. And do you remember I did a piece in about end of November that they hadn't scored from a corner, which I did it deliberately because it prompted them to score soon
well
after.
Done. Thank you, Charlie.
No problem. They got 9, which was only 1, 2, 3, 4. 6 teams got fewer. Than that. I mean, look, they got 9. City got 22. Liverpool got 19. And bridge that gap.
So, some of it is to do with individuals, you know. And I was watching one of those Gary Neville goggle boxes, soccer box things the other day with Dimitar Berbatov, and Neville was saying, of course, this was Alex Ferguson made this exact point. Don't mark the players who can head the ball. Mark the ones who score goals. Because they're making the point that Berbatov, despite his languid brilliance, was a great header of the ball. And I think that, you know, part of the problem at Spurs is that Eric Dier meets a lot of balls but doesn't score very often. And I can't remember the last time we had a real... I mean, Harry doesn't score headers from corners by and large, does he? Maybe they're just not taking the corners properly. I don't know.
We got a couple at the end of last
towards
season.
Towards the end,
One against West Ham, one against... I mean, Arsenal.
Technically.
But that was a kind of... Was that a header? Yes, it was. It was a header.
It was a header from a couple of yards off the ground. Yeah. Well, it was Bentancur, actually, who's a great first. You know, he wins the first one with a really good header. Should say as well, James Horncastle wrote a really interesting piece on Vio during the Euros whilst he was working with Italy and was this kind of secret weapon. He's a former banker, I think. It's an interesting, interesting backstory.
Well, he's not a young man, but that would explain why he's worked up over 2,000 set-piece combinations. And I imagine now that whoever's taking the Spurs, corners, free kicks, etc., doesn't look like it'd be Christian Eriksen, so maybe Son or someone, will have one of those arm guards that American quarterbacks wear with a whole lot of things written down on it to try and remember which one he's supposed to be trying. But actually,
or water bottles.
Aren't they
Kiwis use. I'd love to know how granular he gets. I mean, with this... north of 2,000, whatever it is. I mean, how small variations are we getting in there? Is he slightly cooking those numbers?
Yeah, I think they might be a little bit expanded. But overall, having taken the mickey out of it, I mean, it's just exactly the same thing as when Liverpool appointed a throw-in coach. Why not? Why wouldn't you try and get the marginal gains at this level?
Totally.
You know?
Especially it's an area that, I also did something on how they conceded a lot. We remember when Ronaldo scored that goal.
That was my real concern.
To beat them at Old Trafford. And they at that point, they were on a run. They kept conceding from set pieces. So, yeah, it's definitely an area that needs improving. So, yeah, why wouldn't you bring in an expert?
Well, Mr. Vio is here and we look forward to seeing him work. Again, another handbrake turn, if I may. How important, James, how excited should we be about Alfie Devine and Dane Scarlett reaching the latter stages of the under-19s tournament, the European Championships?
I mean, it's pretty encouraging, isn't it, to have like an England team get to the final of a major age group tournament and two of the starting 11, and they have both started every game, I think.
Devine was on the bench
Devine was on the bench once, apparently. But they've been heavily involved, right? And Devine has did he listen? You should see the smug look on Charlie's face.
I know, it's sickening, actually.
It is despicable.
Can we have a question on that in the quiz next time, Tom?
How many games is...
can that retrospectively count in the quiz? That's the real quiz.
That quiz...
I mean, some of the nonsense that was going on in that quiz, Tom will probably allow that.
you won, James. Don't worry about the road, the long and winding road.
I'm not...
No.
Medals on the tape.
I know. I mean, I just wonder whether people like the reason what was behind my question, which was so poorly put that you didn't get it, I guess, is, you know, will Conte take notice of the fact that these lads are, you know, this is a level up, really, we imagine, international football.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't really know realistically how much higher of that level it. I mean, I suppose when you play Italy, I guess you probably do expect that to be quite a competitive game. But I don't know some of the earlier matches whether those players are actually better than the other players in the sort of in Premier League 2.
Especially but, as I mean, he's playing under 23 level.
Divine. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I guess if you're Conte, the thing you're probably looking at it is looking at that thinking is, well, these two are away. They're still playing football now at the end of June. They'll be playing just into July in the final. I mean, they're going to have a few weeks off before they're back for pre-season.
But having said that, they didn't play a lot of high, you know, the highest level football. Dane got a couple of appearances from the bench. So this is probably sharpening them up for pre-season, I'd imagine.
And they did have a break between their season, like PL2 finishing, and then these Euros starting. So I'm not sure how big a break they will need. And I think it is... I mean, I said this last week and wrote a piece on Devine. I think he and Scarlett... But I think Scarlett was a little bit more was known about because he played for the first team the first half of the season, whereas Devine is younger and had injuries. But he came in and made a really big impression on Conte. And the hope is that they'll sit down and sort out a new contract. Devine's expires in a couple of years.
Right, here is a quiz question. I'm going to give it to Charlie first, James.
Of course you are.
Right.
Of course.
The reason why I'm worried about...
What's your middle name, Charlie?
No. The reason why I'm worried about Alfie and Dane doing so well is the last time an England team at this level did really well was when when Ozzie Ardiles was manager of Spurs. You can give me exact dates, right? They won the Toulon tournament and Ozzie decided to start the new season with the two Spurs centre-backs who dominated that tournament. Oh. They dropped... Gary Mabbott, who'd made 750 appearances at centre-back and was still a great player, and replaced him with one, Charlie, Sol Campbell, 18 years of age.
That was going to be one, yeah.
Who was the other player who Ozzy thought was better than Gary Mabbott?
I mean, this is well in James's wheelhouse. This is before my time.
Well, but that's why I'm giving you first crack at it.
But no. But
I was going to write it down on a piece of paper so I could dramatically show you, but that's not really... It's not good for a podcast.
It's poor audio, yeah.
Was it...
If you get this, Charlie, if you get this, I'll
salute you.
We'll buy you sugar puffs,
I think this guy's too old, but I'll go with my instincts. I'm trying to think. Stuart Nethercott.
That is astonishing. That is He's amazing. That is correct.
Come on.
Oh,
that wasn't who I was going to say, actually. So
who were you going to say? Mike England?
I thought one of the players that you've seen players who played for England and got into this team was Andy Turner. Was it Turner? Andy Turner?
I remember Andy Turner,
It was
Campbell and Nethercott who played centre-back. That is amazing. I mean, of course, he's probably got six minions there getting it on a computer. But no, I'm going to take the honest view here. That was amazing. Well done.
And thank you.
And for the next end of season or mid-season quiz, I'm going to allow it to be 1 point. You'll start a point ahead because of that. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds fair.
James will still win. You know the rules, don't you? All right, let's have a quick break then. And good luck to Alfie and Dane in the final there for England. And when we come back.
And Stuart Nethercott.
Stuart
Nethercott, who he was. I remember him from the 95 semi final against Everton that Spurs lost 4-1, the Amicacci game.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he? I think he very nearly scored or something. I think he hit the bar or something like that. There was some sliding doors moment involving Stuart Nethercott.
He was the player who there were a disproportionate number of stickers of in, I think it was the Premier League 96 sticker up, or maybe
is
95.
That right?
It was an insane number of Stuart Nethercott.
I completed both those albums.
That is brilliant. And Charlie, you know, that given your age and everything, that was an amazing get. Well done. When we come back, we'll discuss the final disappearance of Gareth Bale over the horizon away from Spurs. We'll talk about a great Premier League performance by a Spurs player. And I will try to get to the bottom of why I was in the UK last week but wasn't invited to Antonio Conte's favourite pizza restaurant when everybody else from the View from Lane went. That's the kind of savagery that they've now imparted onto me on this blinking podcast. Back in a second.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. James Moore and Charlie Eccleshare are with me today. And I think it's a moment when, now that there's no more danger of Gareth Bale rejoining Spurs, I think it's only right, James, to reflect on A, what a great player he was for Spurs, B, how he could have done even better if Mourinho hadn't taken a guinea in that year he spent with us more recently. And I'll open the bidding with saying I was really struggling the other day. I'm talking about the modern age, so the last 25 years. I can't think of a better British player, can you?
I mean, certainly not in terms of medals and trophies and whatever. I don't think there's anyone who's had a British player who's had as big an impact in the biggest games, i.e. Champions League finals, where he scored in two.
Well, the overhead kicker, no one remembers anymore. What the hell is going on with that?
Yeah, but he scored in the 2014 final. He scored twice in that game and in the 2014 final as well.
Yeah.
His achievements are, as you kind of alluded to, matched by very few players. Forget British, anywhere in the world. And he's just, you know, at 31, 32, he's this kind of maligned, marginalised figure. It's absolutely crazy that people talk about them in the terms they do. But, you can only assume he's happy to be moving to Los Angeles. It doesn't seem like the worst place in the world to go and live, particularly if you are a big fan of golf. I rather gather that there's some good golf courses over there. Clearly, a World Cup is a big motivation to him. Playing for Wales is obviously something that's always given him great satisfaction. So, being pretty good nick for that tournament, I think their season ends just before the World Cup. So, it'll come to a crescendo for him.
Do you think that because he only spent, was it, four seasons at Spurs and three seasons in the team, do you think he...
No, longer than that.
Was it longer than that?
It was there 2007 to 2013.
Okay.
And then did the season.
So he can,
20 to 21.
He can be counted as a Spurs legend, and he would have to be in your all-time Spurs 11. Is that fair?
He'd be in mine. Yeah. I think so.
He'd probably have to be shoehorned at left back, wouldn't he?
It'll work. It's fine. I'll stick him in goal if I want. Yeah.
Of course, you can. I mean, I'm glad as well that he's going to the MLS rather than to Cardiff City, with all due respect to that football club. The championship...
I think that would have been... Two things on that. One, it would have been great fun. And two, I predicted that would happen on this podcast about 6 months ago.
Well, they would go to Cardiff.
Before anyone was talking about it, I said Gareth Bale would go to Cardiff. Yeah. Someone can listen back to it and find it and then send it to me. That'd be useful.
But the physical...
ITK James Moore.
The championship is murder, isn't it? And I've been watching, because this is pathetic, because there's so little football on at the moment, I've been watching the MLS late at night. And the standard, I'm guessing, and I'm not Antonio Conte, it looks to me like the bottom half of the championship. So I suspect he'll be far too good for it, which would be great. And also, people don't clog each other in quite the same way that they do in the championship. So he may arrive at the World Cup. I mean, was a decent nick.
Rooney went and had some amazing moments.
Oh, that MLS, one where he chased back and
Jamoti tackled the guy.
That was an amazing goal. It was just incredible.
But like, why not?
Yeah.
What an incredible coda to your career. What was the time period you gave Danny best British player?
I would have thought last 25 years.
25 years. Yeah, I mean,
this century.
I think for what he achieved, like for achieving the absolute best things you can achieve in the game on multiple occasions, I don't know if he quite played enough. I mean, like, given some of the injuries he had, I'm trying to think who I would put above. But
Wayne
like
Rooney, Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, I mean, Rio Ferdinand for me has a good combination of winning absolutely everything and being amazing with it.
Medals on the got five Champions League medals, and those players you mentioned have one, don't they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So just based on that, then yeah, I think you have to go for Bale. But if you're factoring in a bit more, which is being absolute top for a consistent period and also contributing to lots of titles, which someone like Ferdinand did, there's competition there. I don't think it's so clear-cut, but probably is still Bale.
I mean, I suppose the caveat to this is if he stayed in the Premier League and hadn't gone to Real Madrid, he wouldn't have won five Champions Leagues, presumably.
Oh, I don't know.
I think if he'd stayed in the Premier League and knocked about, you know, knocked around between Man City and Chelsea and whoever, and won a few Premier League titles and won a couple of European Cups, like, I wonder whether that would be a conversation, whether we would just, like, be saying hands down.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's probably an inherent Premier League bias that counts against him.
With all due respect to Real Madrid, they're obviously a complete joke and they should have had him in the team for the last few years.
So. And just those goals and those two Champions League finals, and you know, you just go, how much influence has he had on the game at the very highest level?
Well, and also that Copa del Rey final where he knocks the ball and then runs around the pitch. Is it Mark Bartra? Is he the defender there?
Yeah, I think it was.
Well, whoever it was retired in shame.
Was it Stuart Nethercott?
It was.
his stint in Barcelona.
Listen, I wanted to mention Gareth there just to wave him off and wish him good luck in the World Cup. And of course, he played in a game that we're going to talk about next.
That's a Ricotto. Sahar, and a bar! Just about perfection from Tottenham today. And the man who's deserved a goal has finally got a goal.
The Athletic is running, I blush slightly because it probably is James's idea, running a brilliant series of pieces about best ever individual Premier League performances. And what I like about it is it's not just a top five or a top 10. I always like a top 50 or a top 100. If we're going to do it right. And we're into the mid-30s now. And I think, Charlie, you've written about performance by a Spurs player. I've got my own view on this, and which I should give to James a little later. But what have you written about this week?
So, yeah, I have been tasked with writing about Emmanuel Adebayor's four-assist haul and one goal against Newcastle in February 2012. I shouldn't have. I'm annoyed I put this in the WhatsApp group earlier. Would you have got Danny, the famous person who died on this day?
No, I wouldn't have. No, I'm not a sort of ghoul. Unless they die on Christmas Day, like Joe Strummer, I don't really remember them.
Who or George Michael?
Remind people.
It was Whitney Houston.
Yeah,
Whitney Houston.
That's taken the air out of the room, hasn't it?
who as James pointed out, Wayne Rooney famously tweeted about that at the time. But yes, let's not lose sight of what that day is memorable for from a Premier League and Spurs point of view, which was, Adebayor's scintillating performance against Newcastle. I mean, this was in that period where, in my head, that season, Spurs' title challenge kind of died when they lost in the January against Man City in that really unfortunate 3-2 defeat. But actually, this game, which was a couple of weeks later, they went 5 points behind United, who were top, even games with United, and played so well. I mean, they won 5-0. They just absolutely battered Newcastle. And we might think of, oh, well, it was only Newcastle, but Newcastle finished fifth that season. We're going for the top four themselves. And Adebayor, it came as well just after Harry Redknapp was cleared in his court case and Capello quit as England manager. And the whole context of this game was, for Spurs, we're going to lose Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Throughout the game, they're singing, "We want you to stay." But it was Adebayor who just completely dominated, was in one of those moods where you couldn't really stop him. And I spoke to Redknapp for the piece, and he was quite interesting. He compared him, because I said, you know, it was at a time where he was slightly damaged goods because things had gone sour at Arsenal. Then City had got rid of him, loaned him to Real Madrid, and he was still a City player. And I think a lot of teams were looking at him saying, not worth the risk. Redknapp, you know, loved those kind of players. He backed himself. Yeah. And he compared Adebayor to when he'd signed Di Canio at West Ham. And everyone said, you know, this was off the back of Di Canio pushing over the referee and people saying, you're mad. Paul Merson, he said as well, at Portsmouth, who helped them get promoted. Another one who I think everyone else thought was one to steer clear of at that point. And Adebayor was having a really good... He did have a really good season that season. He was excellent. You remember he scored 2 against Liverpool in that 4-0, best remembered for the Luka Modric goal. And yeah, he was just talking about how... We discussed this on Football Clichés the other week, of kind of those players described as unplayable on their day. And Adebayor very much fitting into that category
remind people in those terms. My recollections at Spurs were 3 up very, very early on in the piece.
Very quickly.
Can you remind people of who played that day? Bale played, Adebayor played, Luis Saha played. An incredibly attacking team, I seem to recall.
Yeah, I mean, it was in that period where Spurs did play often, you know, with a 4-4-2. Not always, and I think that's forgot, you know, in their run to the Champions League, because, you know, it was the season after they got to the Champions League quarter-final. And they would sometimes play with just one up top. And Adebayor, I think what's interesting about him, he was very much... he joined the Premier League in 2006 when he moved to Arsenal from Monaco. And it was just when Drogba had inspired or was inspiring this move towards just one up front. If you remember before then, typically we thought about teams playing with a two. But Drogba, under Mourinho at Chelsea, was so good and showed the benefits of having someone who could do that and you could add another midfielder. And Adebayor was brilliant at doing that. He was, you know, he could be at that sort of Drogba level when he was on it. But on this day, they did play with two up front. You can try and guess the team if you want. James?
Oh, who would I play? Friedel?
Yeah.
Kyle Walker?
Yeah.
Asu Okoto, I know, scored, so he played.
Yeah. Dawson and King all that season played centre-backs.
Yeah, so that's the defence.
Both those, is that okay? Modric,
yeah.
Parker,
yeah.
Well, Sahar and Adebayor, obviously.
I think did Nico Cranchard score? So he must have been in the team.
Oh yeah. Cranchard,
he did, and that just leaves the aforementioned best British player of the last 25 years.
Oh yeah, of course, that guy. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, that was the team, and then the subs that came on were Ryan Nelson.
Wow,
Aaron Lennon just signed famously along with Sahar that. A month earlier at the end of that transfer window, Aaron Lennon and Jermaine Defoe were the guys that came on.
It's not bad.
But yeah, you know, this was kind of Adebayor and Spurs, that Spurs team when they just could overwhelm teams with all the attacking talent. I mean, that, you know, Van der Vaart was at the club at the time and he didn't play that day.
Can we just, I know it becomes a regular stop on the journey for me. Can we just repeat how underrated Harry Redknapp's time at Spurs was?
Yeah.
Lovely teams to watch, and, you know, they went out to have a go, and sometimes you got beat, but it was my proper definition of Spursy. You're going to have a go. Let's try and get 4 goals here and see how many they can respond with. And Harry did that a lot. And I loved watching them at that time.
Yeah, that season they were amazing for the most part. I mean, the problem was, the thing is, they did fall apart, or things fell away, obviously, in the kind of March period. They had a really bad run,
sure,
but they still came fourth, which was absolutely the stated aim and still a really big achievement. And for them to come fourth 2 out of 3 seasons, and in the season in between they reached the Champions League quarter-final, was incredible. And you don't just do that by, you know, the perception of Redknapp was, you know, he didn't have any tactics. He just said to the players, go and do what you want. That, you know, you don't
achieve what that first team did.
Yeah, it's complete nonsense.
By the way, he's done very well to kind of harness that perception or you know, misconception about himself, isn't he? He having he encouraged that at times,
yeah,
to kind of almost get to like keep the focus and to keep the right or the kind of focus he was more comfortable with on him and not kind of be under the same sort of scrutiny as some of the other managers in terms of like tactics and stuff.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it is amazing though, looking back at this time, how much, you know, the England job was hit. You know, I think he was just it was assumed it would happen, and it was a really sad, you know, spur all the players after the game are talking about how, you know, how sad it is, you know, how much they want Redknapp to stay, and the sense was that what a shame, because he'd built this great team.
It is mad. I mean, you know, it didn't make much of a difference, I suppose, in the end, because they finished the season relatively badly and then he left in the summer. But it is crazy that he didn't get the England job and Hodgson did. And I know there are some people who think Hodgson did a good job of England, but I am emphatically
no.
Not one
that
of those
was people. that was one of the more mind blowing decisions of the FA.
It's insane. I mean, it was just like it is an easy middle of the road decision.
Not
for the FA,
not least because, to me, if you had to say, you know, in a sentence, we're doing all the coaches at that time. What does Harry Redknapp do? Harry Redknapp fills the team with players that he knows can play the actual game, control the ball, pass the ball, and move. He likes players who can play, and then he gets them to play with energy in a well-organized system, often 4-4-2. And given the talent England had at that time, I thought he'd been the perfect manager for them. Also, it made, you know, I think he would have dealt with the so-called cliques that were cutting the England squad into chunks and stuff. I think it was a terrible decision by the FA.
I mean, it was quite a weird kind of era for England because it was kind of we were like the dregs of the kind of golden generation. Yep. Gerrard and Lampard are knocking about, but you know, like Beckham was gone and Scholes and whoever else, and all the good centre backs basically. But before this kind of current team, who are obviously incredibly good, and it's a massive generation of loads of players who have like got to work out some final and Euros final. So it wasn't. I don't think it was like. I don't think it was one tournament for England.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I think it would have been better, more exciting than everything under Hodgson, with the exception of that Sweden game at Euro 2012.
Now, James.
That was a really good game. The Andy Carroll header.
Yeah.
This is not part of the quiz, James, because I don't want to further handicap you for when we do the mid-season quiz, whenever that comes, mid-season, I'm presuming. But my greatest ever Premier League performance is very, very recent. Is by a current Spurs player and cemented the possibility of Spurs getting into the top four in the Champions League.
Look, I think I know what this is, and I don't want to give too much away to who else may be in this list that Charlie met. And Charlie actually convinced me that this... Are we talking about Harry Kane against Man City?
We are not.
Oh, shit.
No, we're not.
I've given it away for no reason.
No. We're talking about Fraser Forster's performance for Southampton against Arsenal. 27 shots at goal by Arsenal. 27, and Southampton won 1-0, and he was astonishing. And, of course, Spurs said, thanks, Fraser. You'll be on the plane next season. Don't worry about that. So I presume that's in the top five or six, isn't it? If this list is to make any sense at all, it's presumably one of the top five performances.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember now.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'll be keeping a beady eye out for that. Go and look at the highlights on YouTube. It is an incredible goalkeeper performance.
Well, and it's funny because whenever Tottenham's Tottenham accounts on Twitter talk about Forster, they include the video of his highlights reel from that game, including that save from Saka where he sort of pours it over the bar. So
Gordon Banks style. Yeah, that was No, it was amazing. And then it robbed Arsenal of those 3 points, and you know, along with the North London derby, that there was the job done.
So this is a message for the listeners now. If you're an Athletic subscriber and you see Charlie has written a piece about Fraser Forster's contribution to Spurs getting into the Champions League, you'll know this is the nexus of that. Yeah. This moment is the moment.
But it is generally regarded, of course, this podcast with you and I, James, on it is a hugely important editorial nexus for the whole of the popular culture. Absolutely,
absolutely, very much so.
Speaking of which, can we do a piece on some of the random players that were in England's Euro 2012 squad?
Go on, name a couple.
There's Martin Kelly.
Martin Kelly is the
big
one. Though he's number five, so did someone pull out?
Yeah,
did
Rio and Rio Ferdinand pulled out? Yeah.
So. I mean, he's there. You've got Phil Jones.
Well, he was regarded then, wasn't he?
He was good.
It wasn't just pictures of his mouth hanging open. Wasn't
feels weird
now. He was still the next Duncan Edwards at that point, I think.
And then you've got Phil Jagielka, Stuart Downing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. As James says, it was a little bit in that in-between period, wasn't it?
All right.
It was Gary Cahill who pulled out. Because I think Rio...
Oh, he had already pulled out on Terry. Yeah,
the whole Terry
thing. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed for that. And I'm very keen to get insider knowledge of these performances, but I shall rest easy until I read them in The Athletic.
Yeah, no spoilers. Yeah, other than the one I've already given out accidentally.
And other than, presumably, something will be dropping out now so that Fraser Forster can get
yeah.
some rubbish one that's going to have to come out. Right. I'm not really giving you jip about going to Antonio Conte's favourite pizza restaurant without me because, frankly, a combination of the temperatures in London last weekend and the impending rail strikes meant I could not get out of the capital of my former home quick enough, to be honest. So tell us about your adventures. The senior members, and I mean in terms of longevity on the podcast rather than years on the planet, you all went to Antonio Conte's favourite pizza restaurant. Who went? Tom, you two, Jack?
Yeah, the four of us.
Yeah.
So yeah, me, Charlie, Jack and producer Tom.
Yeah.
Went and had a very nice
the mainstays, I like to think.
The original and best.
The OGs. Yeah. Well, we had quite a nice time. I think we enjoyed some good pizza.
Do you want to tell us the name of the place?
50 Callow.
Now, it is Jack who sets himself up as the pizza expert. And indeed, he's gone to Italy for his holiday, which is why he's not on here today, in order to further his knowledge of the dough-based food stuff. What did he make of it?
I've seen pizza on his Instagram story in the last 24 hours.
Of course you have.
He seemed incredibly enthusiastic in typical Jack fashion. Yeah, I'd say. I think everyone had a nice time.
We had a lovely time.
We should say, and I mean, the pizza was very good, but mine came out. I mean, how long do you reckon it was, Charlie?
Yeah, there was...
10, 15 minutes after everyone
Yeah, there was that difficult thing and everyone's desperate to start. And James was very noble and allowed us to start. You know, the whole...
As ever.
Yeah.
But. Did they offer any of... when you had none, James, and they had lots, did they offer you a slice of theirs?
No, they didn't, actually. They didn't do that.
Noble you were. You gave the impression you didn't even want it.
Is there a picture of Antonio Conte on the walls of the pizzeria?
No, there were no... For a place like... It's just off Trafalgar Square. And you would have thought that would be exactly the kind of place where they have like pictures of all the famous people that have been there. But there were no... We did ask the waiter at the end about Antonio Conte, which you should have asked at the start, really, so we all could have had his pizza, which was just a margarita, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, something mad like that.
Oh, I mean, that is, you know, the Italian model, isn't it?
Which Tom got
minimal toppings. So producer Tom did have the margarita, so clearly he was... in sync with Antonio.
I mean, hopefully we'll be up on the wall now.
Yeah.
If listeners can go and check,
we record a Spurs podcast. He just had his glazed expression. All right, mate.
Listen, thank you very much, guys. It's been an absolute joy. Hopefully, by the time we come back in a week's time, Spurs will have got some of these players in Antonio Conte wants and some of them out as well. We'll have plenty more to talk about. You will have survived Wimbledon. I hope, Charlie, and not being dragged up by a mob carrying torches and rakes, as I was. And James will have rejigged his best Premier League performances to include my obviously correct bid for Fraser Forster. And of course, thank you all for listening as well. If you're not already a subscriber to Athletic, you can sign up to read all of our articles on Spurs as well as everything else on the site. There's plenty for you to read right now as all the big transfers get done over the summer, as well as all the articles that we've mentioned in the last little while. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for just £1 a month for 6 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. We'll be back next week. Again, thank you all for listening.
The Athletic.